We are grateful that each of you is here today. I'd like to, in a special way, greet our students who have returned. We miss you when you are away, and we are thankful to have you as a part of our services, part of our work here. I think most of you are aware, but let me remind you that David Powell has a Bible class, especially for college university students, on Sunday morning, meeting in the large activity center. We appreciate the work David is doing with the college students. I appreciate the emphasis that our elders place upon this as a part of our work. We just want you to know that we are glad that you are here. I would also like to emphasize our radio programs. Many of you may not be aware that WHHM is now the station that is the background music for Channel 2 on television. And that means on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, if you'll turn on Channel 2, you can hear our radio program over WHHM over the television station, Channel 2. And I think most of you are aware that our 8 o'clock service is being carried live over WFHC 91.5. And I would encourage you to tell people in the community, even people who may be somewhere else in a service at this time, might be encouraged to listen at that. The station plays a cappella music for about 15 minutes while we're observing the Lord's Supper at 8, and then picks us up at about 8:15 on that station on Sunday mornings. Two or three of you have come in this morning and said, I've already heard you preach, so maybe I can sleep through this service. But encourage others to listen at that time, at the 8 o'clock time on Sunday mornings. Those of us who live in Henderson are convinced that we are well blessed to be able to live in this community and to be able to worship as a part of the congregation here. I'm convinced more and more that there are many, many good things, maybe more than we really appreciate as we should. Many things about the local work that I appreciate, and how the church here, as the elders lead us, reaches into other parts of the world to preach the gospel and to help people. I am especially appreciative of the fact that our contribution and our giving has been as it has been for the last several years. I get about 100 bulletins each week. This helps me to keep in touch with what's going on throughout the Brotherhood. And there are not many churches among those that I get the bulletins from them where they are constantly ahead of their budget. In fact, most of them are behind, and some of them sometimes as much as $1,000 a week behind. And I just wonder how they're able to carry on their work in a very positive way. But that's not the case here at Henderson. If I remember right, when we moved here a little over 8 years ago, our contribution was in the low 40s, occasionally below 4,000 each Sunday. Our elders have given us a budget each year since then that has been a reasonable budget, a challenge, and yet one that's reasonable, and we have gone over our budget goal every year. We did this last year. We averaged $7,349 a week for 49 weeks this last year and had the four special Sundays that went to the building fund, averaging almost $11,000 a week on those four Sundays. The contribution for the 53 Sundays during last year was $403,000. We went over $400,000 in our giving. In addition to that, there was about $50,000 that was given directly toward our building program in fulfillment of commitments and other gifts. When you take into consideration that there are other congregations that help in some of the works that we do, and money goes through our treasury for that, we have a treasury now here at Henderson that is approaching $500,000 a year. That's a lot of money. That's a lot involved in the Lord's work. And I just appreciate the way that congregation has responded. I remember when we needed to build the building in Brazil, we gave $56,000 in less than a year and raised over another $100,000, and during that time our contribution came up. I remember the plans as we made for the last two or three years concerning our new activity center. We have given and given, and our contribution continues to come up. The congregation here is to be commended for the response that it has given to the challenges put before it by our elders. And I appreciate the fact that our elders use what I consider to be good judgment in giving us a budget that challenges us and yet is reasonable, and always say to us, if we go over, we'll use that to do more of the Lord's work. I think that's a good way to approach it. You will notice that our budget for this year is $7,500, and there will be a detailed listing of the parts of this in our bulletin within the next week or so. That's only $151 a week above what our giving was last year on the regular Sundays. We have over 600 members. We have over 325 families. Just a little bit of an increase on the part of each of us will just automatically take care of that, and I'm convinced that it will. But you know, as much as we talk about budgets, and as much as we talk about money, it may be that sometimes we look at the wrong points, or at least we don't look at enough at some other points that need to be considered. I believe a budget is scriptural. They planned a year ahead in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. It just makes common sense that there has to be some reasonable plans for a congregation to work. But you know, it seems to me that I need to be thinking about myself and my relationship to God more than I do the $7,500 figure. And perhaps a study of the reading that Eric read a few minutes ago will help us to do that. You noticed, I'm sure, that he was reading about the giving by the poor widow, the widow's mites. We've heard that as long as we can remember. And I've heard lessons in which the preacher took a lot of time to try to decide exactly how much that was compared to our money today. We all know it was very little. Probably less than any one piece of coin that you and I have ever seen in our money system. But folks, I'm not as concerned about exactly how much those two mites were worth as I am the gist of what is being said in these four or five verses here in the latter part of Mark 12. You see, the reason that I emphasize that is this. I am convinced, I have no doubt, that if each one of us can understand what's involved in this setting and understand the right attitude toward material things and toward the support of the Lord's work, that our budget will take care of itself. If you and I can develop the right attitude toward life, toward what's in life, and toward eternal life, I don't think there's any question about what our giving will be. Let's just take a few minutes this morning and observe some ideas from these five verses here in the latter part of this chapter about the story of the poor widow and her giving. I want you to notice in the first place that there was a treasury in the Lord's house. Now, under the old law, of course, there were different tithes that were commanded. Many of these had to do with the grain and the flock. But there was also the opportunity for free will giving, especially described in passages like Deuteronomy 16, 16, and 17. And the indication is that there was some kind of a place, maybe a box of some sort, that was kept in one of the courts of the temple. Whereas the people came into the temple to worship, they could cast into what Jesus here calls, or what the writer Mark calls at least, the treasury. be reminded, if you will, that Jesus was still living under the old law at this time. He had not died. He was in the process of keeping that law to perfection. Therefore, he went up to the temple on this occasion, and the Bible says he sat over against the treasury. There was a treasury in the Lord's house. And there is to be a treasury in the Lord's house today. And when I mention the Lord's house, I am not talking about this building. I'm talking about the house of God as it is mentioned in 1 Timothy chapter 3, where it talks about it being the pillar and the ground of the truth. It's God's people. There is to be a treasury. And you and I know by bringing other passages into consideration, within the local congregation of God's house. That's the way God set it up. It was true at the time that we're reading in Mark 12, and it is true today. It is called a store in 1 Corinthians 16. Let every one of you lay by him in store. There's some kind of a common store where we are to lay into that in the sense of giving. It is called a bounty in 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 5, where Paul is talking to the church at Corinth and reminding them about what's been done in Macedonia and how there was a bounty that was to be available to do the work that needed to be done, the bounty that they had even planned and were forward a year ago to be ready to do what needs to be done. So there is definitely the teaching in the Bible that there is to be a treasury in God's house. Sometimes people say, oh, I wish we'd quit talking about money. I wish we did not have to think about money. Folks, money is a medium of exchange. And those of us that are parents realize that we cannot carry on our family activities without there being money involved. We cannot carry on a business without there being money involved. And I'm convinced that the Lord's church is the greatest business in the world, and there is money involved. There is a treasury in the Lord's house. Notice in the second place that Jesus was watching that treasury. Jesus was watching the treasury in the temple. It says he sat over against it. Whether or not by purpose on this occasion, we might speculate, but at least he was sitting by the treasury, and he was observing what was going on. He was watching what was taking place. And he was able to discern what was taking place to the extent that he talked about much and little, and talked about the amounts that were being given by the people. Jesus was watching the treasury. You and I need to understand that there is a sense in which Jesus watches the treasury today. He was beholding the people as they passed by, and he beholds us today as we go about his work. Psalms 1:6 says, he knoweth the way of the righteous. God knows the way of the righteous. He knows what we're doing. He is aware of it. Word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Hebrews 4:12. Next verse explains how everything is open before the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And we're even told in 2 Corinthians 5:10 that every work will be brought into judgment. Jesus knows, God knows what you and I are doing as far as the treasury is concerned, for that matter, as far as every aspect of life is concerned. There is a treasury in the Lord's house, and Jesus watches that treasury. It is evident from this passage that Jesus assesses the contribution. Based upon something, he assesses the contribution, because he said that many of the rich gave much. Much is a comparative term, not in terms of dollars and cents or whatever the coins would have been then, but at least in a comparative sense, Jesus assessed their contribution. And he said many of those that were rich were giving much. But then he assessed the poor widow's contribution, and he does here know what she was giving, because we're told that she gave the two mites. He was aware of that. He assessed it, and he said she gave more. He used terms of much and more as he talked about what was being cast into the treasury. Folks, God assesses our contribution today. And I would hasten to add that you and I need to be more concerned about God's assessment of it than the assessment that somebody else might make. God assesses our contribution. In Matthew 6 and verse 4, we're told that even the alms that we give on a day-to-day basis are noted and we'll receive a reward. Matthew 10:42, even a cup of cold water given in the name of a disciple doesn't go unnoticed. God is aware. He knows exactly what we are doing. In Revelation 2 and verse 9, in addressing the church at Smyrna, it is said, "I know thy poverty, but thou art rich." God was aware of what they were doing. It seems that one of the things that was involved as Jesus assessed this situation with the poor widow and with the rich was not so much what was given as what was retained. Because he goes ahead and says that the poor widow gave all her living, at least her living for that day. We sometimes think maybe all that she had. You see, Jesus was able to look at the situation. He was able to know what each was doing, and he was able to assess that in light of every factor that ought to be considered. That's something you and I could not do. If you even told me what you are giving this morning and I told you what I'm giving, based upon what we know of each other, we might draw some conclusions, but there's no way that we could draw the complete conclusion and be right in the sense that God can. Because you see, God knows everything about you and about me in a way that we don't know. Sometimes we may be heard to say that we think somebody's giving too little, or we may comment in a positive way about what somebody is giving. I'm thankful that I do not know what others are giving, and I try to avoid knowing what others are giving because I've got to concentrate on myself. But even if we did, if I knew what every person in this audience is giving this morning, there is no way that I could assess that and put it in proper focus, but God can. You see, God knows how much we spent last night on a date. He knows how much, in my case, we spent Friday night to go out to eat. He knows what I retain to take care of my responsibilities in my family, and that's something I'm to do. There's nothing wrong with that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with a date or anything wrong with going out to eat. But what I'm saying is that God is able to know all these circumstances. And sometimes I wonder if God is pleased with us when he looks at what we are able to do in all other areas of life and maybe how little we do to support his cause. But I want you to get the point. Jesus assessed the contribution. And then in the next place, he assessed the circumstances. It wasn't the two mites that impressed him. It was the two mites in the set of circumstances that impressed him. You and I have a tendency to judge things with dollar signs and cent signs. We have a tendency just to look at the amount of money. That's not all there is to it. Jesus looked at some of these people and he said, some of these people are rich. And he looked at this other person, particularly the widow, and he said, this woman is poor. He made an assessment of the circumstances. He knew what the ability was. He knew what the capability was, as well as the amount that was given, and his conclusion was based upon that. In Luke 12:48, he taught that to whom much is given, much is required. The story of the talents indicates to us that principle and also shows us that the final assessment of the situation is not based upon the amount, but based upon the amount relative to the circumstances. The two-talent man received the same reward as the five-talent man. not based upon the two and the five, but based upon the circumstances and what each of them had done relative to what each of them had the ability to do or the talent to do in that particular case. Perhaps it's summed up in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12. If there first be a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according to that he hath not. Jesus did not, in this case, folks, criticize the widow for giving. He did not leave the impression here that the poor have no responsibility and should not take advantage of the opportunity. He complimented what the poor person did. And he also commented on what the rich people did. Sometimes those who have less than others begin to rationalize and reason, what I do is not very important, it doesn't amount to much, somebody else can do much more. That may be true. But you see, the problem is you're beginning to judge yourself by somebody else, and that's where the problem really begins. That's what I pointed out in the first of the lesson, and it's where I want us to be sure we keep our minds. Jesus didn't compare in the sense of doing more than others by the amount, he compared by the attitude, by the motive, and by the circumstances that were involved. And he said that each one is going to be looked at by what that person is able to do, not what somebody else is able to do. And here's the bottom line when it comes to our giving of our means. It is not the budget figure. And it's not just the amount of the figure that you and I give, but it is the setting of that based upon the set of circumstances that we have. Jesus assessed the contribution, yes, but he assessed it in light of the circumstances. And then in this setting, he taught his disciples to give. It's interesting to me that it says he called unto him his disciples. Jesus saw an opportunity to teach them something, and he realized that they needed to be taught. And the words that are said in verses 43 and 44 are said particularly to teach his disciples to give, and to give with the right attitude. I think what Jesus was saying to them there is not unlike what is included in Paul's account. As he talked to the church at Corinth, he said in verse 5 of chapter 8, 2 Corinthians, they first gave themselves. And then he talks about how they've abounded in other things, and he says, they see that you abound in this grace also. Verse 7. Verse 8 says, you do this to prove the sincerity of your love. Verse 11 says, you're going to perform out of the readiness of mind. Verse 24 again says, you're proving the sincerity of your love. In all of this, it seems that Jesus is emphasizing the importance of everyone. He got the rich and he got the poor in the story of the widow. And then in that setting, he emphasized to his disciples the importance of giving. Everyone. He did not criticize the widow. He did not even criticize the rich on this occasion. He said many of them were giving much. He just pointed out how to get things in proper focus. I think we many times miss the point. Yes, there's a lot of good going to be done by what we contribute. The gospel is being preached in Brazil. It's being preached in Russia. It's being preached in other places. Benevolent acts are being performed every week, almost every day. We're adding to our building, we're doing a lot of things. But folks, that's not the point. Oh, that point needs to be understood in proper focus. The point is not what are we doing to help others. The point is what am I doing to help myself as I give of my means to God. What's it doing for me? Look what it did for the widow. You can just see her joy bubbling out of that passage, even though it's not mentioned. You can just see how glad she was that she could sacrifice. It's not a question of ease, but maybe more a question of difficulty. And look at what the benefit was for her. This is where we need to touch the problem or maybe not the problem, the opportunity of giving in the support of the Lord's church. And again, I say, if all of us can understand this point and we can have the proper attitude toward ourselves and our circumstances and have the love of Jesus that we ought to have, our giving will take care of itself. When we understand the value that it does to us, we'll have the value to do to others. Perhaps it's sort of summed up there in that fifth verse of 2 Corinthians 8. They first gave themselves to the Lord. It's not hard to get a husband to do something for his wife if he's in love with her. It's not hard to get a wife to do something for her husband if she's in love with him. You and I just need to be in love with Jesus and give ourselves to Him and realize how important it is to have that right relationship. And our giving, not only of money, but of time and effort and talent and other things, will take care of itself. Have you given yourself to the Lord? Maybe that's where you need to begin this morning. For some, it may mean that you need to come and be baptized into Christ and start giving your life to Him and living for Him. For others, it may need be that there needs to be some correction, some maybe that can be taken care of in private, but maybe some that need to be taken care of in praying one for another. We need to give ourselves to the Lord. If you've not done that, and you need to come, do so as together we stand and sing.
While you see your soul's deep need, while your Father calls you home, will you not, my brother, come? Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now? Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now? You have wandered far away. Do not risk another day. Do not turn from God your face, but today accept His grace. Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now? Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now? Come to Christ, confession make. Come to Christ and pardon take. Trust in Him from day to day. He will keep you all the way. Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now? Why not now? Why not now? Why not come to Jesus now?
Be seated, please. The song before the Lord's Supper will be number 174. 174.
When we meet in sweet communion, where the feast divine is spread, hearts are brought in closer union, while partaking of the bread. Precious feast, all else surpassing, wondrous love for you and me. While we feast, Christ gem.